I'd like to say I'm excited to wrap up this series, but I'm kind of sad. I said this morning in pre-talk, this is a series that I could spend a long time in. In my deconstruction, coming out of organized religion and Christianity, one of the things that was a constant for me and a thing that really reconnected me was my love of nature and being connected to nature. A couple of winters ago, Lisa and I, this was right after we had stepped away from church, because we're a little bit non-traditional, a little crazy, we sold our house. While we were waiting for our townhouse that we have in Westfield to be finished, we spent a winter in our RV out in the Southwest. And living in connection with nature is such a treat. I don't know if anyone's had the opportunity to go camping recently, tents, glamping, RV, doesn't matter. Anything that you do that gets you outside where you can wake up in the morning, possibly see your breath, maybe start a campfire, and you're hearing the birds chirping that are waking you up. The light of the sun is your alarm clock. There's something so refreshing about being connected to nature. I'm especially grateful because we have been kind of looking for and planning out our summer. We're a tad nomadic, and so we move around a bit more than the average person. And we weren't exactly sure. We had a winter rental on Lake Michigan that we loved. And we had just moved out from that a couple of weeks ago. And we had an opportunity that became available that we were able to jump on. And so we are going to be in our RV again this summer, locally as a camp host. And I won't tell you where, so that's not going on the internet yet. But you can come up and ask us later on. And two nights ago was our first night. We just moved in with our sites, and as it happens when you have an RV or anything like that, you know, the first day or two is about fixing the things that are broken. You know, I had winterized it, and then when I went to go start things up, I had leaks, and I was making a mess in the RV and fixing things and all that. But we're mostly settled in now. I'm so appreciating the opportunity of spending the summer again in this way. I know not everybody can do this, especially not every couple can do this. We learned very early on that if you want to test the boundaries of a partnership, a relationship, try RVing with each other. Get on the road for a while. The only more immediate thing to testing that, if you want a quicker test, is try backing a boat into a launch slip. If you want to see some of the most magnificent marital arguments there, watch the person in the thing and talking. The person, no, back to the left, the other way. Lisa and I had many of those in the first few months with our RV as we were learning all that stuff, backing in and all that. But what I love about that form of living for us, for me, is the new rhythm that happens in that way. We fall into a rhythm and a way of living in our RV that is different than normal life. You simplify dramatically. You reduce your clothes down to just a small amount, your food, your essentials. You want everything to be as compact and to serve a purpose. When we first hit the road in our RV, we thought we were gonna need all these things, and we drove out west. And the first time that our kids met us out there, we just loaded them up with all kinds of crap. We're like, we don't need this and this and this. RV living, being out in nature, reminds you of the things that are essential, the things that are important. And it's a rhythm that you fall into. It's a way of connecting with nature, living closer to nature, living at a slower pace. This past week didn't feel slow for me. I'm still kind of running on caffeine and adrenaline. But this idea of being in nature, listening to nature, is kind of what this whole series is about. I am very aware that we have a very active, socially engaged ecologically conscious community. I mean, Wayne's meditation, right? This is the idea that we all believe in, that there is something deeper and truer. There is an ecological philosophy that we should espouse, that we should try to lean towards. So I don't need to preach to the choir here about the importance of caring for Earth, the importance of doing all the things that we're doing. What I've said is this series is about trying to fall back in love and rediscover our connection with this beautiful planet, with our sacred Earth, to move past understanding things in our head and to connect with our bodies, our hearts, with this wonderful world that we're living in. But that brings us to this tension point. We have to ask, what kind of story are we living in? Last week, Kent talked about this idea that what we pay attention to matters and that what we direct our attention to matters. And in our world today, there's a lot of noise. He mentioned that quote about the two songs, right? One louder, and then there's another subtle. We talked about this morning, it's almost like a bass line, this low rhythm that undergirds everything. I loved when we started this morning with the didgeridoo, which, you know, it's going to be a good morning when you have a didgeridoo to start out. These instruments that have these low bass notes, these low rhythm instruments, oftentimes can get drowned out if it's not properly mixed, but it's that low bass note, that rhythm that drives the music forward. And in our world, the dominant story that we're receiving, the dominant story that many of us have received, is a story of separation. And that story leads to individualism, leads to this idea that we can somehow control or cultivate nature to our desires, leads to ideas of ownership, owning land, owning resources, and then extraction of those resources in a way that is not at all engaged with this sense of oneness and connection that we have. So we have all inherited a story. We're not just in relationship with nature, we're in relationship with the stories we've inherited about our world, about our connection to our world. As Kent said, what we direct our attention to becomes our world. Attention shapes not just what we see, but how we see it and how we live. And so we're trying to bring our attention back to our connection with this beautiful Earth, with this sense of a story that we're a part of. And these stories that we have inherited, stories of separation, of disconnection, of resource extraction, are stories that have shaped the narrative and have given us the world that we have today, a world where profound disconnection is all around us. People feel disconnected from this planet, from each other, and from the greater story of creation in this beautiful world that we live in. But another story is possible, and that's what we want to talk about this morning. The title for this talk is called A More Beautiful World, and it's a short excerpt from the title of a book I just finished up, I did an audiobook, so I don't have the physical book, but it's a book called The More Beautiful World Our Hearts Know Is Possible by Charles Eisenstein, who has also written a couple of other books, Sacred Economics and The Ascent of Humanity. But this idea that there is a more beautiful world our hearts know is possible is something that we intuitively believe in when we think about this planet, but not many of us necessarily think that it is as possible today. Thich Nhat Hanh coined this term that we talked about a couple weeks ago, this idea of interbeing. And you should have received a separate handout along with your bulletin this morning. It's not for necessarily right now. It's a good reader. You can read it right now if you want. I don't care. It's a good explanation of what interbeing is. I'm going to read you just this brief quote that's also in your bulletin. And interbeing is just this understanding that nothing exists separately from anything else. Thich Nhat Hanh says, interbeing means co-being. This is the quote that's in your bulletin. Interbeing means co-being. You cannot be by yourself alone. You have to interbe with everybody and everything else. It's this understanding that if you take any element out of the whole and pull it away, that it is connected to the whole with thousands of invisible threads of reciprocity and connection. That we are a part of the fabric of the entire cosmos. He says, if you look deeply into a flower, you find that it is made of non-flower elements, like the sunshine, the clouds, the rain, and the soil. Without these non-flower elements, a flower cannot exist. So it is better to say that the flower interbees. And for those of you grammar nerds out there, this is going to bother you a little bit here, but work with us as we do this. The flower interbees. It forms this intricate connection with all of the things. Anybody who's followed some of the experiments that the scientists have been doing and our astronauts have been doing in space through the years, especially on the International Space Station, you know, they're attempting to grow various plants and various things in space, which is pretty fantastic, pretty astounding that we as human beings have evolved to the point where we can launch ourselves up in a rocket orbiting this planet, and then we're growing things in space. But even those plants that they're growing in the International Space Station still need the same soil, which came from where? The Earth. The seed and the plant, which came from where? And it needs sunlight, needs water, needs these elements. That flower, that plant, interbees, interconnects with all those things to make up the flower that you see. Without these non-flower elements, a flower cannot exist. So it is better to say that the flower interbees with the sunshine, and it cannot be by itself alone. It's the case with humans also. I am here because you are there. I am here because you are there. We talked about this a little bit ago, too, this African word, Ubuntu, which Archbishop Desmond Tutu talked about a lot, this idea that Ubuntu means I am because you are, that there's this reciprocity, that my well-being is wrapped up in your well-being. And that when I am suffering and I am experiencing loss, that in some ways you are experiencing that too. And if we expand it even bigger, remember last week Kent talked about zooming in and zooming out. If you zoom out even further, we realize that the pain and the disconnection that our planet is feeling from those of us humans who have mindlessly extracted resources without thinking about the planet. That pain, that loss, that disconnection is something that we feel too and cannot be separated from because we all interbe with this planet that we live on. We cannot be separated from this planet any more than the flower can be separated from the sun, the rain, the clouds, the soil, and all the things that make up the flower elements. That flower exists because of a complicated relationship of all those things. You and I exist because of a complicated story of evolution and our planet growing and bringing forth all these forms of life and intelligence, and we're a part of it. We're a part of it. You are not a separate self. This week, if you take that interbeing thing and hand out and read it, I'd encourage you to do it maybe just in 3 to 5 minutes of a time of quiet mindful meditation afterwards, as you think about this concept of your connection with everything. And that in some ways, the words on the page and the paper and the trees that gave us the pulp that the paper is written on, and the electronics that were used to create the printer that printed those words on the paper, all of these invisible threads are as connected as you and I are with the paper that we're holding. We're all interconnected. As Robin Wall Kimmerer says, the earth doesn't belong to us. We belong to it. We came out of the earth. We were birthed from this great planet. And our fate is intricately tied to the fate of this planet and to every other species. The birds, the plants, the trees, the other beings that we share this planet with. We're intricately connected to them. So why is it so hard to live in this place of interconnection, of interbeing? Because when we talk about this, these are the kind of concepts that seem intuitively true. I don't have to convince you of this, because when I tell you this, it feels true and it feels right to you, doesn't it? You know that when you see videos on the internet or on the TV of rainforests being plowed down and monocrops, when you see about industrialized agriculture that rapes our planet and destroys ecosystems, when you hear about how we as human beings, at the height of our technological prowess, at the height of our intelligence, somehow thinks that it's acceptable to treat other species on this planet as commodities. When Lisa and I drove back from out west and we drove through the northern tip of Texas there, we were driving through the cattle capital of the United States, where most of the red meat, the cows that give us our red meat, are, I don't know how to describe it, because to say that they're cared for is not accurate. If you've seen what happens in our industrialized farming and agriculture, we have so disconnected from the story that we think it's okay for animals to be treated as objects, to not have a care for their pain, for their connection. The cows that give us our milk are mothers who are separated from their children at birth so that they can continue to produce that milk for us. And we think this is okay, and we think that it doesn't affect us. Because it's happening somewhere else that we can't see it, and because we have the luxury of staying several steps removed from all of these damaging practices, we can go in the grocery store and we consume oftentimes mindlessly, and we don't realize what it is doing to us. Not physically, what it is doing to our connection to everything. Interbeing asks us to live, to surrender this illusion of control, to recognize that we are, as Robert Larson quoted a month ago when he was here, he quoted Chief Seattle that talked about this web of life and how human beings are just one strand of that web. We are not the weaver of the web, nor are we the caretakers of the web. We are a strand in the web. We exist in connection to everything else. So interbeing asks us to surrender this illusion of control, and that can feel vulnerable. I want to read an excerpt from this book here, The More Beautiful World Our Hearts Know Is Possible. Charles Eisenstein says, "The state of interbeing is a vulnerable state. It is the vulnerability of the native altruist, of the trusting lover, of the unguarded sharer. To enter it, one must leave behind the seeming shelter of a control-based life, protected by walls of cynicism, judgment, and blame. To move into this more beautiful world that our hearts know is possible, to achieve our connection with this planet, it asks us to confront our own stories of disconnection, to realize the stories we've inherited and the ways that they have shaped us. Interbeing asks us to think about our connection to our planet, to each other, and to realize that our answer in moving forward doesn't rely on us figuring anything out, but in us connecting with what is already happening, to recognize we're not separate from this world, but we live in a culture of separation. We were discussing that Annie Lightheart quote last in pre-talk, and the those two tones, the more loud notes, and then this subtler, quieter tune that exists below it. Right now, I think we can probably all agree that the noise, the cacophony of sounds that is coming from this planet is all but drowning out this underlying sense of connection. We know it to be true intuitively, but we don't feel it because we don't see it. Because everywhere we look, we see stories of disconnection, of separateness, of us existing as objects in this planet and not coming out of this planet. Our fate being more bound up together in it. And we buy these stories of separation because we're surrounded by them. I just read a Stephen King book. Any Stephen King fans out there? Anybody read Duma Key? Duma Key is one of my new favorite Stephen King books. I've read a lot of his. There has so many good one-liners and quotes in there. One of the lines that one of the characters quotes in there a lot is says that we fool ourselves so much we could do it for a living. And I think when it comes to our planet and the way that we respond, we have been hoodwinked in the grandest way. And the wool's been pulled over our eyes so much that we don't even realize the ways that disconnection is driving the story and the ways that it is hurting and harming us. You see what you want to see. You hear what you want to hear. What I'm hoping is that through this series and these conversations that we have, as we keep coming back to this over and over, that we can spend some time bringing conscious connection and awareness to the places where we feel the most disconnected from our planets. For you to do all of the things that you do to save the world and to save the planet, planting trees and recycling and doing all those other things, but along with that, to nurture your own sense of interconnection, which is as important, if not more important, than the tangible acts that you do in the world. One doesn't supersede the other, but you have to have that sense of connection that drives our ecological activism. Otherwise, we're susceptible to perpetuating that sense of disconnection by thinking that we are somehow other than, from the outside looking in, trying to fix something, instead of realizing that we're a part of the whole thing that needs fixing. And the thing that needs fixing is restoring that sense of connection that we share with our planet. This happens in big and in small ways. Yesterday, when Lisa and I were going for a walk, as we have here in West Michigan, so many beautiful dune preserves and these wonderful paths. And we came upon this nice little section of trail that there was lots of sand. And so I took my shoes off and my socks off so that I could walk with my feet into the ground. This past week, we did our mindfulness meditation group at the Spring Lake Library. And Carrie led us through these practices around mindful walking. And if you're on the email list, you may have gotten the links and stuff from that. I encourage you to try that as a practice. So wonderful. And especially if you can do it bare feet, if you can sink your feet into the ground as you're doing it. I'm notorious as I'm walking in woods or in anywhere to touch, smell, taste sometimes the things around you in the natural world. To know that just the act of walking through the woods, something known as forest bathing, which is a beautiful idea, concept, has physiological, neurological effects on you. You are changed physiologically by spending time in nature. This isn't about crafting some grand scheme to save the planet. It's about you and me starting first with ourselves and realizing that our own stories of disconnection are what drive this sense of separateness that we feel from our planet and especially from each other. This disconnection that we see on the news and that we're so discouraged by in our politics, this is a symptom of our greater sense of disconnection. It's a symptom of the fact that we've lost the plot. We forgot the melody. We're singing these discordant tunes, and everybody is trying to just play louder and play on top of each other. And before long, you've got this cacophony of noise, but there is something deeper and truer underneath that only emerges if we listen for it, if we create the space to recognize it, to see it. You know, this weekend is a holiday weekend. It's Memorial Day, and it's a day that we remember the lives of those lost in war. And while we honor that, perhaps we can also ask, can we expand our awareness and our remembrance beyond the graves of those who have killed or have been killed by others in all of these conflicts as human beings? And can we also expand our remembrance to the roots of why we war in the first place? What is it that drives us as human beings to constantly strive against those that we share this planet with? Ezra Klein has a new book out, great, that I recommend, called Abundance. This idea of living in a world of enough, of abundance, not scarcity. If you have done any studying of ecological models and on our planet, we know, and if you have perhaps grown up with these scare stories from the 80s and the 90s, we thought for a while that famine was going to destroy our planet. And then there was going to be the ozone layer that was destroyed. And at every step, we realized that there are fixes that we can do. There are things that we can do to change that. But now we're realizing that it is our part of the story as a whole that is most suffering. We are disconnected from the world that birthed us and the planet that we're going to return to. So what if we remembered not just the fallen and those who have lost lives in war, but what if we remembered the wholeness, the interbeing that they and we are part of. To recognize that every life lost in war on our side or the other side affects us. It's a part of our species' profound disconnection with the world around us. Maybe we have grown so wise and intelligent that we think we have figured out more than we have, and we need to spend some time with the squirrels and the birds, our new pet puppies, our animals, the insects, reaching our hand into the soil, remembering that we're a part of this web of life in a very real and tangible way. And while we're doing fantastic things in the world right now, we're planting trees and we're standing for peace and we're doing all the things that we as a community need to be doing. But let's not neglect to begin first by restoring this connection within, maintaining this sense of interbeing within us that should drive everything else. The surest recipe for cynicism and burnout is trying to fix this planet or our sense of disconnection with our species, because it's practically impossible. It's all around us. So what do? We begin within. And we say that when we take steps, when we move towards a sense of connection of ourselves with this world, that is just as profound of a shift as recycling, as standing up, because those stories of disconnection have led to more disconnection, have led to more profound ways that our planet is experiencing crisis. And so we begin not by trying to fix the whole, but just starting simply and fixing this interconnection, shifting from separation to interbeing. A more beautiful world is possible. And the shift from separation to interbeing happens when we choose to see, with what we choose to see and with how we choose to live. We're going to invite World back up here to play us out. And while they're coming up, I'm going to tell you a little bit about our last Earth Altar invitation here. This week, we've asked you to write a note or a prayer. And if you notice, I said a prayer to Earth, not for the Earth. So maybe you wrote it as a prayer to something or someone else out there. But what would it look like to write something to the Earth as a prayer? What does it look like to talk to the Earth and to apologize for our own ways of profound disconnection, to reconnect with the many, many ways that this even broken world nourishes us. Afterwards today, at some point, we'll invite you up to just leave your note, your prayer for the Earth Altar, and then we're going to take all these different elements that we've collected over the last number of weeks and wrap them up in something really cool. But let's allow this interbeing story to continue to move us forward to restore the more beautiful world that our hearts know is possible, to participate in this act of co-creating by recognizing our connection with everything and everyone in this grand web of interbeing and interconnection. Thank you. Namaste.